Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another incredible edition of Tech Watch Radio, where we keep an eye on tech so you don't have to. Brought to you by NetworkProvidersInc.com, our website for the broadcast, NPITechGuys.com. Spread the word, share the love, would you please? Jay Harrison's with me. Welcome, sir.
Cyber greetings, Sam.
Thank you, sir. All kinds of things are going on in the tech world. It's hard to know what to even focus on. I want to quickly talk about a previous episode, though. Right at the end, Jay said, Sam, come up with a better name for net neutrality.
Right.
And I kind of said, well, you know, equal fairness, fairness for all, accessibility for all. I don't know what you want to call it. But I kind of thought, what would be a good name for it? Jay, do you have a good name for it?
I don't, no. I think that... And net neutrality is a great name. The alliteration's good. It's just been it's been kind of warped, and it means different things to different people. So it's not a great term.
You ever seen the commercials Let Go of My Ego? Talking about waffles.
Yeah, right.
Well, I'm thinking Let Go of My Ego might be a good deal. Just keep your hands off this sucker, right?
Yeah.
You know, keep your hands off would be a good name. Hands
corporate
off
corporate and government, everybody just keep your hands off. Leave it. Just, you know, IP.
Yeah. Just let it be the net. Let it be what it is. And don't mess with it. You know, you could have what do they call those things? A graphic? What are those? A meme?
Yep.
You could just have a meme where they got the internet in a chokehold and just be like, no, stop. Anyway, there's ways that we could really highlight this in meaningful ways. Greater minds could kind of come up with a solution. But I really think I just want the internet to be the free flow of information. I just want traffic rolling, and I just want to basically get better internet roads everywhere, faster.
I feel like that's what the internet's been, though. It's been greater minds constantly making things better. IPv4, IPv6, and it hasn't needed any government regulation to make these things better and to get things going. There's been cooperation and boards worldwide that have kind of got things figured out, and kind of think they should keep it that way. I don't think
keep your hands off.
I don't think the U.S. needs to have, you know, their hands all over it so much, but I don't think they should really let go of certain controls that they have over things. I just think that the internet's been good. Let's not ruin it, guys.
You could use a Spanish term. You could just say no lo tocas.
Well, I don't know what that means.
Don't touch. No touch. Don't touch it. No lo tocas. On the internet. All I'm telling you is I think the internet's been great. And even when there's been concerns with spam or concerns with breaches, hey, the private sector has built better firewalls
right.
and better routers and better security. And, you know, people have taken that in hand and done tremendously well with it, Jay. Now, I'm not saying we couldn't do better. But I think the more we have freedom to do this, I think that we build a better mousetrap all the time.
It's the
America's
way the internet
provided leadership for that, right?
Yeah, it's the way the internet was designed. It was designed to be able to take damage and reroute and just handle itself and not be controlled by any one group. It's, you know, peer-to-peer, and that's the way it should continue to be, I think.
All right, there you have it. Anyway, I just thought I'd bring that up because it was kind of a funny thing. I think no lo tocas would be the greatest way to kind of say net neutrality in a different way. Just don't touch it. Just don't screw it up. And every time we put it in the hands of big corporations or big somebody, then they, as a central control, they tend to screw it up, Jay.
I don't think they have a good track record.
Central control is the key.
Yeah.
All right, enough of that. There is a serious problem. We're going to call it in hack update. In hack update, United Health reveals ransom was paid. It says a substantial portion of Americans possibly had data stolen.
Oh, no.
Jen Gidman is the one that put this article together. And it basically said hackers stole health and personal data from what could amount as a substantial portion of Americans, United Health said. They did pay the ransom. We don't know how much they paid. It's a subsidiary of United Health. It's a group called Change Healthcare is what it's actually called. It's the division of United Healthcare or United Health. And they say it's left the market in disarray. It's kind of a big problem. They say the group called Black Cat are the ones that claimed responsibility for this thing. And they say we're 100% down when it comes to billing right now. And anyway, it goes on and on and on. It's a big old long story. But the point is, folks, this is where no matter how secure I try to be as a person, unless I don't have any health care, unless I don't have any phone, you know, like T-Mobile or Verizon, or In other words, when you're part of these big corporations and they get hacked, you're at the mercy of it all, Jay.
You are. You have no control over it. And personally, I say shame on them for UnitedHealthcare in trying to pay this ransom. They should. They've already had their data stolen. They're only going to subsidize more of this by paying a ransom. They need to just fix the problem and move on. I mean, I know that there's people still today that can't submit claims to United, and there's issues with it, and it's they should have had better backups. They should have better controls.
No question.
Everybody can get hit,
right?
Nobody's perfect.
By them paying the ransom, they can prevent the leak from being as catastrophic.
I don't believe that.
My response to that is that depends on the honesty and the integrity of the crooks.
Well, we know there is no honesty or integrity just because you said they're crooks. I mean, who runs ransomware and who's an honest guy? Nobody's doing that. That's a Hippocratic it doesn't exist. You can't have both.
Yeah, how do you have, honor among thieves, Jay?
You don't.
That's what we're talking about. You don't. And so I think that it was a huge mistake to pay this ransom. I know they think they prevented a bigger problem, and temporarily they might have. But long term, they've merely proven the reason these people do this stuff, right?
I thought at one time the FBI had talked about going after companies that pay ransoms. And maybe this is an instance that they should look into. I don't know, but I really don't think companies should be paying ransoms. I know it sucks. I know nobody's perfect. You can get hit. These are bad guys. They're thugs, and it can happen to you, but don't pay the ransom because you're just making it worse. If nobody ever paid ransoms, if everybody in the whole world stopped paying ransoms, this stuff would dry up overnight. There would be no ransomware because there would be no incentive to do it.
That's exactly the point. So anyway, I bring this up because, the average Joe is kind of at the mercy of this. I mean, you got to have health care. You can't tell which health care provider is going to get attacked. You can't even oftentimes deal with your doctor without connecting to their portal to fill out their paperwork or
right.
to get updates on, your last visit or to get a prescription or whatever the case may be. You can't avoid this stuff these days. It's not possible to not engage in these realms, and it's impossible because you don't have any control over it, not to get hacked then. So if I'm part of this, then I got hacked and I can't do anything about it except for try to change my passwords and recover on the back end the best I can. But the folks that paid the hackers aren't going to do me any favors, are they?
No. No, they're not. They have no interest in doing that. And in fact,
now,
if anything,
I'm the victim. I'm the one that's harmed. I'm the one should get something, if anybody.
Once you
now,
got
when I say
somebody.
I mean the public, right?
Yeah. But once you have a big business like United on the leash of blackmail, what makes you ever want to stop? I mean, when is that gravy train ever going to come to the end? You could just keep going. 6 months later, you still have another back door in, or maybe you can say, hey, we're going to leak some more data because we need some more money. What are you going to do about it? You're just going to keep paying the blackmailer? I don't think so.
Yeah, that's the mistake of it all. Anyway, I bring it up because we track these big hacks, because if you're just a listener, you need to understand that you don't really have a lot of control over it, but you also need to understand when it happens. Because if you have, for example, a what's this thing called? It's United Health, but it's the Change Healthcare is the division. If you have a Change Healthcare account, then you can know you've probably been hacked. When we talked last time about T-Mobile getting hacked or this or that getting, whatever the case may be, you can at least be aware that, hey, your data may not be safe. And the first thing I would do is go in and change passwords and a lot of that kind of stuff to try to secure myself. There's also sites, as Jay has mentioned on previous broadcasts, where you can go and see what's out there on the dark web about you, or what's out there in the world of cyber crime out there about you, that do they have your information or whatever. And you can take, proactive steps to mitigate the problems that come from this, Jay. And that's the whole purpose to discuss it, really.
That's right. I think in the past we've mentioned haveibeenpwned.com. Pwned is just P instead of an O for owned. It's a weird hacker term, but you can put in your email address, especially personal email. They have some like paid versions for websites or businesses you want to monitor their whole domain. But as a personal site, you can, or just like your Gmail, for example, or your personal email account, you can plug that in, see where breaches have happened that includes your data, and you can make sure proactively that you can change your things. Yeah, I think you can also get on an email list too, to where they'll update you if something comes out. So it's worth checking out if you haven't done it before.
There's also services that kind of watch for you too. For example, if you have a password manager, like I use Keeper Security, they right. have a little button you can press and it'll, you know, run out there and check a given password that you have in your system and say, is it out there on the dark web out there where people can use, or are there breaches? And, you know, there's proactive steps and things you can do. There's also companies that can help you with a lot of this kind of stuff too. So,
that's right.
You know, that effort is getting better as time goes on too. You know, when I started on the internet, it was a pretty, for the most part, friendly place. Not true anymore.
We all just used monkey123 as our password for everything.
Yeah. Don't do that.
Or I love you.
All right. Kim Komando, who I normally don't quote, but I think she does a really good job in her own talk show. She really does. And she brings a lot of good information. We just have kind of a different focus to our show than she does, right? But she has something that I really thought was worthy of sharing, and I wanted to give her the credit for it as well. She says this: here's how to avoid malware. Safety: charge your phone in public while traveling. What do you do, Kim Komando? Actual cases of juice jacking are rare or non-existent in the United States, but you know what? They can happen through USB connections. All right, so let's kind of break this down. When she talks about juice jacking, she's saying if you plug into power, it's really rare in America that you can get hacked that way.
Right.
Just power. Now, in other countries, it's a lot more likely, by the way. So beware if you internationally travel.
I wonder,
juice jacking is a thing.
Does it have to do more with there's more iPhones stateside and more Androids?
I think that's part of it. I also think a lot of those other systems, as you know, you can hook little devices to your power. Plugs and do internet over power or whatever. I don't know what word it's called, but you can plug in a device to your wall power outlet and it can, you know, use that infrastructure in your house to send data.
Yeah, IP over power lines.
That same technique, though, is used to where there can be some hacks going on. And what she's saying is that juice jacking is what it's called. It's relatively rare in America.
I don't think that's what they're doing in this case, that kind of protocol that you're talking about. This is where your data connection is connected at the same time. Now, you can buy these little adapters. Some people call them USB condoms. I think it's a stupid name. But if they're a data blocker, they just block the data cables. And so you only get the 5 volts power. Those used to work pretty well, and they still do. They work fine for charging your phone at, say, a normal rate. The problem is, especially with USB-C and other things, you need some of that data connection to negotiate the power back and forth between the power provider and the cell phone so that it can ramp up. So when you use one of those, you're only going to charge at whatever the standard, you know, 7
speed
watts
is,
or whatever. Yeah, you're not going to get high-speed charging that way unless your data pins are connected, and therein lies the thing. Some of the things you can look out for, though, is don't have your phone unlocked while you're doing it. And if anything pops up that says, hey, you need to unlock your phone or whatever, if you're charging on an untrusted jack, don't unlock your phone. Just don't, and don't approve any computer connections to the phone either while you're doing it.
Yeah, so her point is, however you're looking at this, whether you're in a hotel and you plug your power into the wall or whatever else, it's not a big deal in America for the most part, but USB is how people are getting hacked a lot.
Right.
And so the airport's crazy. The weather, unpredictable. Travel's tough enough, and then your phone dies. But the owners say, hey, don't worry about it. You plug in, you'll be safe. But the FBI and others are warning about this, and so is Kim Komando, so are we. You got to stay away from USB ports of any kind, especially when you're traveling overseas. It's worse overseas than it is in America. While USB standards are international, foreign hackers can attack these things. Don't use a cable at all. So you can wirelessly charge. That's one of the great ways. Or best, have your own backup that you plug in and charge at the wall, and then charge your phone from your own backup.
That's right. Carry a battery with you that can recharge your phone a couple of times. Look up the maximum power. I think it's 2,700 or 27,000 milliamps. That would be 27 amps. Is the maximum battery you can carry on an airplane, for example. Just get you like a 25,000 or whatever. It can juice up your phone several times, and you're in control of your own power, and then you can charge that anywhere you want, and you don't have to worry about the data connections.
And the same thing's true with Wi-Fi. You know, a lot of people just jump on any Wi-Fi anywhere and stuff, and if you really have a VPN all the way back to your company or whatever, maybe it's secure, okay, fine. But for the most part, you should use your own Wi-Fi, BYOW, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Bring your own Wi-Fi. Or, you know, you need to bring your own power, too. Just don't connect to places and things that you don't know for sure. Now, I think if you're in a hotel, a lot of times you're safer than if you're at an airport or a train station or somewhere else. But it's levels of safety, though. If you don't plug into anything,
well,
except for your own stuff, you know, you're a lot better off. I even, believe it or not, bring a whole, you know, solar generator kind of a thing.
Right.
What's the one I have called? It's a...
The Goal Zero.
Yeah, Goal Zero. I oftentimes bring a Goal Zero, and then I don't plug into anything but my power. And the only time I use power from elsewhere is to plug into the Goal Zero, which for the most part has nothing that can be hacked, comparatively speaking.
Yeah.
So you need to be really careful with this, and I think Kim Komando's brought up a big deal. The FBI is warning about it, and as more and more and more of this sinister stuff happens, I'm just telling you, avoid public places and plugging in, period, end of paragraph, the best you can.
Agreed.
The more you do it, the more at risk you are.
Bring your own power and have your own solutions for things.
Anything else on this, Jay, that you think is important?
I think one of the other things that I would kind of recommend, and it falls into the same vein, is you can get these little, if you're semi-tech savvy, most people listening to the show would be, if you're traveling to get a travel router, you can plug these in your hotel, either Wi-Fi or where they replicate, they connect to the Wi-Fi, even the airport Wi-Fi or wherever you're at, and then they create a NAT router and put you below that. So you have your own firewall and your own safety shield there, and then you can connect all your devices to it. Like sometimes, for example, on a cruise ship, you can buy internet, but it's only for one device. Well, you buy internet for your travel router, and then you can connect all your devices through it, like yours, your wife's, your laptop, whatever. And that way you can
because above it,
put another
really
firewall.
Realize.
Yeah, and you're not really on that network. Your little travel router is just like your home internet gateway is being the NAT router and firewall for you, and it can protect you quite a bit, even on public Wi-Fis and things like that. You're not going to get the same level of kind of being up here on that same network with everyone else.
And I know some people are saying, you know, that won't happen to me. It's no big deal. You know, it's easy to think that, Jay.
And it won't happen to you until it does.
That's right. And that's the point I'm making. It's kind of like, well, you know, hey, your credit cards are safe too, unless you lose or your wallet gets stolen.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like it's a big deal that it happens to other people, not you. You're a very careful, good, responsible person and citizen. I agree, but remember, a lot of times things are outside of your control.
That's how people feel about muggings, too. They're just like, it's probably not going to happen to me until it does, and then...
Yeah. And I really want people to remember it's kind of the same thing, too. You know, people can hack your stuff. The better passwords you have, the more of a VPN you have connecting to your office or whatever else, the better off you are. What a VPN does, just to make it simple for folks, is you create a private tunnel. And people can see the tunnel traffic, but they can't decode what the traffic is because it's all encrypted. So they see a stream of data, but they don't have the ability really to decrypt it or access it. And so VPNs do a lot of that. There's a lot of simple precautions you can take. And, you know, this may be too complicated. You may say, I don't know how to do all this. Well, that's why there's IT partners out there that can help you with this, though. It's not very hard for people who know what they're doing to put some security things in place. And if you're in an airport and there's 50 people connected, just for example, you know, they're gonna watch the traffic, whoever's doing this kind of evil stuff, and they're going to basically pick the weakest ones to go after. They're not, if you have a encrypted tunnel and they're like, they're not going to spend a bunch of time in the half hour, 2 hours you're there to try to hack your deal. You've just basically got rid of the low-hanging fruit and said, hey, I'm not going to be the easiest lock to pick. That's all
right.
You're kind of saying.
Unless you're
need to remember, don't plug keyboards or different things into any public place either. They can keep track of your keystrokes. It doesn't end. Just don't connect to untrusted things.
That's right. And unless you're being targeted because you're a celebrity or a politician or for some, you know, a big corporate CEO or something like that, that's a different story. But just like you said, you don't have to be the low-hanging fruit. And all you have to do is implement a few of these things. And everyone that you do, every tactic that you take mitigates some other problem, gives you that defense in depth strategy and makes you less and less of that hanging fruit. And that's half the battle right there, I think.
All right. So all I can say is this. Remember to bring your battery pack along. It's something so simple. You charge it before you leave, and you have that in your backpack. And then when your phone starts getting low, boom, you pop it on there, and you're safe as could be because it's your own stuff.
Yep. And even if you're cool and you're just like, hey, I charged my phone before I left, bring your battery pack anyway because your buddy might need it.
Good point. By the way, on one of the next episodes, and I've had this story for a long time, Jay, but I want to kind of tease it in this episode, and then talk about it next time. Headline says Teslas crash more than gas-powered cars. Here's why. Peter Valdez with this piece, and they give you a big old bunch of reasons why, and I kind of find it interesting. The quick 30-second summary, though, is that, hey, the way those cars drive are different. You have one pedal, you press it down, and you go, and you let it up, and it stops you. A lot of people get confused on that kind of stuff, and a lot of people, you know, they just don't really realize how it's the car's going to respond, and people crash a lot more. We'll get into that in another episode, but I wanted to kind of highlight that. That'll be an interesting discussion. I also talked about, on a political show that I do, 10 reasons not to buy an EV. Well, right after I did that 10 reasons, I got it over at the Blaze, that one, not to get an electric vehicle. Turns out that Ford literally lost $1.3 billion in the first quarter of this year on electric vehicles. They lost literally $130,000 per vehicle. And
how do you lose $130,000 on a $60,000 car?
I don't know the answer because I don't have all the internal reports, but I would make some guesses that it's in infrastructure and manufacturing and all the things along the way, right?
Yeah. They could have just been buying cars for people for that and just handing them out for free.
Right. But there's a whole infrastructure for that. And, you know, when you build a lot of plants to process vehicles and whatever else, you're saying we got to, you know, sell, I don't know, 10 million of them before the plant kind of starts to pay for itself or break even or dig you out of the hole because of the sales. And so I think it's all that kind of stuff that it takes to produce. And if you don't have a good plan forward, then you got to put all the cost to where you are, right?
Wow. So are the EVs, I don't see Ford like lowering the prices on their EVs though. I want to see like a Ford Lightning for, you know, 40 grand or something reasonable and affordable.
You're not going to. You can't. They're too expensive to build. In fact, they say some of the battery replacements can be up to $60,000.
If you're losing 100 grand or 130 grand on them, you ought to be just giving them away, I would think.
Yeah, because then, but then yeah, I guess you lose more because at least you get back the 60 grand. Anyway, it's just very, very strange. And I'm not here to be against electric vehicles from a technical point of view either. All I'm telling you is that it's not ready for prime time. All I'm telling you is there's 10 serious problems in the article that I saw that pointed out that, you know, we've got to kind of revisit this thing and think through and work on technology to make it ready for prime time.
I think it is ready for prime time. I just don't think it's being executed properly. I mean, I think that so you have all this promise of an electric vehicle. It's not going to have a motor. It's only got 12 moving parts or whatever instead of hundreds. And it doesn't need oil and it doesn't need all this maintenance. And yet they're not less expensive than the gasoline version of the exact same pickup truck or whatever
right,
it is or
not,
car.
Because they can't make them for that price yet. So that's what I mean by it's not ready for prime time. The market's just not ready.
I don't know where the bottleneck is on that, though. The promise was and should be, I think, that these cars, they should be electric cars for half the price of a internal combustion engine car, and it should be just as nice or, you know, I don't know why they're not being able to pull this off.
Yeah, the point is they're not even close. Well, for a lot of reasons. I'll give you one example. And we don't have time for it all. We'll talk about it next, one of the next episodes. But for example, the roads aren't built for these kind of vehicles. They're usually 1,500 to 2,000 pounds more heavy than your normal gas-powered vehicle. And on the highways, it's no big deal because they're geared up to deal with 18-wheelers and everything else. They're fine. But when you talk about side roads, the road from your house to the grocery store, the road, you know, from your house to the freeway and stuff, those roads get broken up and potholes and everything else because these vehicles are just, they're way heavier traveling on this. And so now all these communities are going, wait a minute, you put all these, you know, EVs on these roads and now it's just so expensive to fix all the roads. That's just one example, Jay.
Well, I thought the DMVs were taxing based on the weight class of your vehicle.
Well, they are. That doesn't mean that your local municipality can fix the pothole, though.
Still bugs to work out, but, you know. So do you think that, you know, the question is, do you think electric is the future, though, Sam? I mean, California's doubling down on
it. If they do it right and if they keep their hands off and if we work through the issues, I eventually think the electric vehicle can be absolutely incredible.
I do,
too. But you're going to have to develop an infrastructure to support it from the ability to charge all the vehicles. That's another huge problem. So they got to work through a lot of things. Do I think it'll eventually become a great opportunity? Without question. We're just not there yet. So I want people to be realistic about where we are.
We're trying.
Think of and work towards solutions, not just say you're an idiot for saying that. Let's work together and solve it. I think we can. Remember, it's all about tech. We keep an eye on tech so you don't have to. Spread the word. Share the love. NetworkProvidersInc.com for your tech needs. NPITechGuys.com for the radio show. Spread the word.